Stephen Ferris will reflect on Ireland's back-to-back Six Nations campaign.
Niall Moran joins us to talk Hurling League semi-finals, plus Stephen Kelly and Alan Cawley on the beauty of the FA Cup.
If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552. We're on X at GameOn2FM, or you can WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200.
Now, welcome along.
Game On on 2FM.
Welcome along. Cian Tracy and Alan Cawley are with us in studio. You're very welcome, guys. Do you have a good sporting weekend, Alan?
Brilliant sporting weekend. I've had a sporting few days. Marie, I was over at the Champions League match during the week, and then obviously we had all the sport over the weekend. We had Cheltenham, so I was in Galway Friday night for the Shamrock Rovers and Galway in the Premier Division, and I was at Sligo Rovers and Drogheda on Saturday night. I was out for a few pints watching Manchester United and Liverpool yesterday, so I've had a great few days, Marie.
Absolutely have. Cian Tracy, have you?
Yeah, Ireland winning a Six Nations title doesn't get much better than that, does it? And yeah, I thought the moment of my weekend was certainly Peter O'Mahony, I think, sharing the lifting of the trophy with Tadhg Furlong. It was a really lovely moment that probably summed up a great campaign for Ireland.
And Ruby, you made it home from Cheltenham?
Just about, Marie. Got home late on Friday night. Just in time to sit on the couch and watch all the rugby and actually the hurling. Galway and Limerick around the same time as Italy and Wales. So, start sporting weekend exactly what it was.
What do you mean you were sitting on the couch watching hurling and rugby and Shamrock Rovers and Galway on the box as well, Ruby?
They were on a bit later, weren't they?
What a quarter day kickoff?
That was on Friday night. Friday night was on Saturday night.
Oh, sorry.
Alway. I thought I did well to get out of Cheltenham and make a 8:30 flight home, let alone get home in time to watch Shamrock Rovers and Galway.
I can picture Ruby Walsh flying home now from Cheltenham to watch the League of Ireland.
I could imagine, Ruby. It's a long week, is it?
It is a long week, but look, it was a great week. Mm. But it was helter skelter out of there, and then you went into Birmingham Airport, which was, I would advise nobody to go near Birmingham Airport at the moment. It was unbelievable, but we just about made our flight and got home in time, thank God. Left my phone on the plane. A very nice air hostess brought it off for me, so big thank you to her.
Highlight of the week, Ruby?
Highlight of the week, Gallop and the Champ winning back to back Gold Cup, and probably even more so Willie Mullins training his 100 winner at the Cheltenham Festival. That was an incredible milestone, but I don't know, I thought all in all it was a brilliant week, some great racing. You'd love to see champions like Gallop and the Champ winning again, so yeah, I thought he was magical.
Cian Tracy wants to give you a compliment.
I just thought for someone who hasn't got a clue what goes on in horse racing but likes to watch the odd race or two, particularly at Cheltenham, I just thought the analysis of what's actually going on in a horse race, dumbing it down, I suppose, for people like me was pretty good. I actually felt like I had a clue that I knew what was going on, so fair play, Ruby.
Thank you very much, Cian, but I don't know, I suppose an awful lot more involved in racing than people see, and it's not just about what's going to win, it's how it's going to win. And I think it's fascinating when you look at other sports. We'll talk about whether Klopp is going to play a 4-4-2 or what way Andy Farrell is going to line out the rugby team, but no one ever wonders what way a horse race will be ran, and there's as many tactics in a horse race as there is in any sport.
Yeah, that's true, because your analysis especially looked at that and even been able to tell, well, Paul Townend rode that horse out differently before and had a totally different way of doing it this time round. So that was great to be able to hear that.
It all changes, and you know, horse racing has a huge amount of tactics, and I suppose people are quick, as we are in every sport, to point out what somebody's doing wrong. But I think if we can show that actually he didn't do it wrong, the horse wasn't just good enough at times, it can make it easier for people to understand.
Especially when you think how hard horse racing is. Like, they're going, is it 40 mile an hour, Ruby? Like, the pressure that was probably on Paul Townend, having to make those split-second decisions. It's all right saying you're on the best horses, no more than you experienced in your time, but there's serious pressure on them to deliver as well.
There is, but that's in every sport, isn't it? Mm-hmm. The pressure on everybody to deliver. But, look, I think the one thing about Cheltenham last week was because of the rain and the soft ground, it does show that National Hunt Racing is a better sport played on slow ground. Speed is the biggest problem with it. I mean, you can slow the ground down, you slow the horses down, and then it becomes even more tactical, and I enjoy that.
Yeah, I think we all enjoyed watching it and watching you as well, Ruby, as we did the Six Nations. And after a nervy enough game against Scotland, Ireland did claim back-to-back Six Nations titles. Let's remind ourselves of how it finished.
5 seconds remaining in the match as Conor Murray looks to get it now. Conor Murray has a look around. He gives the ball back to James Law, who got us it, and he blasts it into the stand across on the far side of the pitch. And the referee has blown the full-time whistle at a relieved Aviva Stadium, and Ireland are the Six Nations champions.
These are special occasions, these are special days, not just for us as a group. Obviously, we care about each other a lot, but we care a lot about the supporters and everyone behind the scenes that help us to be able to get to nights like this, and we're just very thankful to be able to get it over the line.
What growth have you seen in the squad over the course of this championship?
It's huge, the growth, because the experiences that we've had with the young lads, you know, the leadership group are going, it's a little bit different dynamics there. We've got a few injuries that are coming in, you know, I mean Jordan coming in there at the last second typifies what they're all about, you know, they're growing all the time, and the loss last week is going to make us bigger and stronger. He got us to this moment now, didn't it? And you know, they're all Six Nations winners, so we're chuffed a bit for them.
Just to finish, a word on your captain. Is there a possibility we've seen Peter play for Ireland or play in Dublin for the last time?
I don't know. I'll have a beer with him tonight, and maybe one or two more tomorrow as well, and I'm sure we'll chew the fast.
Special day, special group of people. And, you know, we put in a lot of hard work, you know, this group. I think going back to this, the World Cup, it was, you know, it was tough, but it galvanised us. And you know, between our families, you know, the staff, I think everyone's close, and it's a great group. And delighted that we could show everyone the respect and the jersey, the respect we're winning today.
There's been so much focus on every piece of your body language today. A lot of speculation about your future. Is this the last time we'll see you play for Ireland in Dublin?
I don't know. It could be. You know, I've got a couple of big decisions to make over the next few weeks with my family, and you know, see how my body feels. You know, I'm still loving it, but you know, I've a couple of important conversations to have, and I tell you what, if it was the last one, I'd be a happy man.
A storied career, so much has happened on and off the field. Are we about to witness the defining moment of your career for you to lift silverware as Ireland captain?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's only been a handful of us lift five of them. You know, they've all been special in their own right, but you know, I think to come back from the defeat in the World Cup, come back from last week, you know, it shows the character and the group that we have, and I'm very grateful that I could have been a part of it.
Peter Armani there, and also Andy Farrell speaking to Damien O'Mara after that big victory. Stephen Ferris joins us now on the line. Stephen, they're not easy to win, are they?
No, certainly not. You know, it was a tough day at the office for the lads. Scotland really put it up to them the first half of the game, and you know, it was all getting a bit edgy, and I think everybody in the stadium was like that as well. So yeah, no, congratulations to all the boys. Thoroughly deserved it, in my own opinion. I'm sure there might be a few that disagree. I thought they were definitely the best team in the championship and deserved winners. So yeah, as Peter O'Mahony referenced, there's only a small handful of them have won five, and you know, that's a tremendous achievement.
If that is the last we've seen of Peter O'Mahony in the green jersey, how great a servant has he been for Ireland, Stephen?
Yeah, he's been unbelievable. Like, you know, he's had bumps and bruises along the way. He's had competition. He's had people questioning his selection for, well, his whole career, really. He won his first cap alongside me back against Italy. Seems like a lifetime ago. And, you know, he's still hanging in there, and who knows what's around the corner for him. I think everybody could maybe agree that we thought that this Peter O'Mahony captaincy wouldn't be a long-term thing, and it would be, would he be the guy to lead us to the next Rugby World Cup? Probably not. And I think his body language, as Damien sort of alluded to there, it maybe suggests that, you know, if that was his last game, or maybe there is a couple more in him, you know, fair play. But yeah, he's a great servant, and you know, and some of the games that he's played, and you know, even in those couple of games against the All Blacks, he was just unbelievable. And he hasn't quite recaptured that form in the Six Nations, and you know, I think a lot of people are now saying that he could maybe leave on a really big high.
Keane, what are the complexities around his contract situation?
Well, he's out of contract at the end of the season. He is currently on an IRFU lucrative central contract, but he's coming off that, is the expectation, at the end of the season. So that would mean that Munster would have to stump up for his salary, which is obviously complicated. But from what you hear, Munster have made him an offer, which could be supplemented by the IRFU, which would obviously help Munster as well. Look, can Stephen has touched on it there. I think he would be, he'd be a massive loss, I think, to Munster in particular. I think we've seen when he hasn't been playing this season how much of a loss he's been, particularly in terms of his leadership. So perhaps that played into, or is playing into his thinking around whether he will or he won't retire. I mean, certainly last week I had heard whispers that it was going to be his last game. You arrive at the Aviva Stadium, Peter O'Mahony's on the front cover of the programme. Could be a coincidence. You see him, I know he's emotional at the best of the times during the anthems, but you could see how much it meant to him. And look, I think it's a mark of the man that if it was his last game, that he didn't want to make last week about him, because you know, you saw George North had announced his retirement from Wales, and that was attempted to use as a big motivating factor for Wales. But even afterwards, Peter O'Mahony, you know, and obviously he might decide to play on, but certainly reading the tea leaves, it looks like it could be his last game.
Well, he's been an unbelievable servant, if it is, and I don't think anybody's going to say any more things that are more gracious than the pair of you have just now. But anyway, Stephen, even leaving that aside, when you look back to the England game and then you look to the Scotland game at the weekend, was there much difference in the Irish side? Did they improve from the game 9 days ago to the game last Saturday, or was it the same team again?
Yeah, I haven't actually had a chance to go back and go through the Scotland game and pick it apart like the England game. And, you know, I think England were just much better than us on the day, and Scotland weren't any better than Ireland at the weekend there. I think Ireland, that 25 minutes after halftime, really showed their dominance, their power, that they can turn on. They made fewer mistakes. Granted, they give up a couple of really good try-scoring opportunities, but, you know, England were just a slightly better side on the day, and Ireland just couldn't find the rhythm in that game, where they did manage to find the rhythm against Scotland, and they did manage to get that try that got them over the line. So for me, I think the Scotland weren't as good as Ireland, and you know, ultimately Ireland were able to do just enough to get the victory and to send everybody home very happy.
And they did send everyone home happy, keen. But when you look at it, you look at the performance against France at the start of the Six Nations, you go back to the start of the World Cup, is there similarities in that our performances seem to just come down a notch the further we go in competitions?
Possibly, yeah. And like to be fair, Andy Farrell didn't make a huge amount of changes. Obviously, in the Italy game, he made a few, but there could have been definitely justifiable reasons to make changes after the Twickenham defeat. But he decided to stay loyal to the exact same 15, actually, who started the game. And look, in one way, you can understand that, because he was looking for those who probably, well, definitely underperformed in Twickenham to deliver a response. But I just thought they looked a bit leggy. They lacked energy. They went to the bench earlier than they did at Twickenham, which did help, and they got a bit of oomph from that. But I think when we go to South Africa in the summer, you might see a bit more of freshening up, particularly if the likes of Peter O'Mahony isn't going to be involved. But it was a strange occasion on Saturday. I mean, the achievement of winning the Six Nations was unbelievable, but as an occasion, it just felt a bit flat. Now, Stephen's touching it there. The game itself wasn't very good, so it's difficult for the crowd to get into it. And to be fair, they did in the third quarter when Ireland came out after the second half and definitely lifted it. But just their inaccuracy, I mean, their territory and possession was in the high 60s, but they just weren't able to put Scotland out of sight. Now, you have to give the Scottish defence some credit. They definitely learned a few things from what England did. They came hard at the breakdown, and Ireland really struggled to put them away. But to your point, Ruby, yeah, I think it's probably something they'll look at. There are fresh ideas coming in the summer, which I think is no harm at all, because you're going to get Andrew Goodman, who's Leinster's attack coach at the moment, is going to come in. And while Mike Catt, who's the current attack coach, even though Andy Farrell does run a lot of it, there's going to be a change over there, which I think that's coming at a really good time, because perhaps, like, when you're at the top, as Ireland have been, particularly in the Six Nations, teams are analysing you to the nth degree, and I think we've seen that over the last couple of years. So having Andrew Goodman come in from Leinster, where they've had some brilliant trick plays in particular off set piece, so I think that will be really good timing, and it could be the freshening up of ideas that Ireland need.
Stephen, obviously the end of the World Cup was the end of the Johnny Sexton era. Has Jack Crowley impressed you to the Six Nations?
Yeah, I think he has. A huge amount of pressure, Ruby, on a young man's shoulders with very little experience in the international game. So for him to lead his side, make the right calls generally at the right time throughout the championship. I know he had a bit of an off day of the kicking tee in Twickenham, as did England, of course. But yeah, I think he's only going to grow with maturity and experience, and you know, obviously his all-round game as well. We haven't seen the best of him with his running game. You know, you watch New Zealand when they're in full flight, and Beauden Barrett or Mwanga at out half, you know, they can really take the ball to the line and back themselves and make half breaks and offloads. We haven't quite seen that yet. He's very much a give me the ball and I'll put it on my foot, or you know, throw it out to one of the pods, or the short passes that we've been so easy to see in the eye over the last number of weeks. So yeah, I think Jack Crowley's been you know, he's been unbelievable. You have to give the guy credit, because you know, so many people doubted him coming into the Six Nations, that he didn't have what it took to you know, to step in for Johnny Sexton. But you know, fair play to the young man.
Keenan, area that concerned people heading into the Six Nations, an area that concerned people heading into the Six Nations was the line out. How do you think that went over the campaign?
I think overall it wasn't great, if I'm being honest. Like, with the line-out in particular, you can look at the cold hard stats, but they don't always tell you the full story, because it's about the quality of ball that Ireland are getting at. And look, it was very good in Marseille on the opening night. But there was obviously, you have to take into account that France had one of their locks sent off early. But each of the tries that Ireland scored in Marseille that night came from the line-out. So it's obvious to see how important it is in terms of a platform to Ireland, for Ireland to play off. But if you look at the Italy game in round two, Italy didn't really challenge in the air. Wales did in round three and caused Ireland problems. England went after Ireland's line-out in a big way by picking three locks with Ollie Chessum in the back row, similar enough to what South Africa do in terms of getting the height into the line-out, and that caused Ireland problems. And again, at the weekend, there were a couple that went awry. So, look, I think it's still going to be a big focus. You think of, like I just touched on South Africa there, one of their biggest strengths is the line-out. So if it's not nailed on when you're going to play two tests in the home of the world champions, you're going to get found out. So look, they have Paul O'Connell there, one of the best, you know, Stephen wouldn't know far more about this than me, having played with him, but one of the best line-out acumen you could possibly have. So I've no doubt they're in safe hands. I think James Ryan has probably been a bit of a loss. I know he had lost his place, but like, he's an outstanding line-out operator as well. You've had Ty Byrne taking on the responsibility of calling the line-out, and again, Stephen would know a lot about that in terms of the complexities that are involved in it. And look, it hasn't always been smooth sailing, so I would say it was a pass mark, but going to South Africa, it's going to have to be a lot better.
Pass mark for you too, Stephen, or would you give it a bit more? And what about the scrum as well?
Yeah, I think definitely a pass mark. And, you know, sometimes you've got to give a bit of credit to the opposition. I thought England were very cute in everything that they did, closing the gap, got on top of Ireland. Anytime there was a ball thrown in, there seemed to be two guys up in the air. We've seen it against South Africa in the Rugby World Cup. You know, they started off with three or four full men lineouts, and obviously lost all those, and then all of a sudden they shortened it down. We didn't see that as much. I think one thing with the line-out that I was quite surprised was there was a lot of down and gives, and Josh van der Fleer passing the ball out. I would have loved to have seen Ireland go after a few teams with them all, you know, really try and lay down a marker up front, and I thought that would have been more of a case against Scotland as well, but it wasn't. So yeah, look, they're going to keep evolving their game and changing it up for whatever team that they play. So I thought the line-out was okay, but it can always be improved upon. And you know, I think the scrum was brilliant against Scotland when they really needed something to, you know, change the game. You know, I think that scrum where we've seen Xander Fagerson more or less being bent in half by Andrew Porter and you know, putting him over his own locks, like that just got the crowd into the game, and you know, it really does mean so much. But they're going to be up against it when they go down to South Africa with the best scrum in the world, and three lads to bring off the bench too are going to make a huge impact. So you know, that's something, an area of their game that they're going to work hard on over the next couple of months, I'm sure, and hopefully go down to South Africa. And even if you get an even playing field down there when it comes to set piece, it, you know, it'll go a long way to hopefully winning a test match.
Stephen Ferris, I know you have to head off, so thank you so much for joining us this evening to look back on that Six Nations win. Keane, you're going to stay for another few minutes. Just on heading to South Africa, is that the best thing for them, though, that they're going somewhere where they're going to be challenged, and they, if they need to reinvent themselves in certain areas, then they're going to be testing themselves against the best?
Yeah, I think it will be a slow sort of, I don't think they'll go and try and reinvent the wheel by any means, because South Africa is just not the place you want to go and do that. So I think it will be probably a lot of continuity from what we've seen in the Six Nations, with maybe a couple of other guys brought along for the experience. I think in November is probably where you'll see the big shift. But I mean, not to look too far ahead, but I mean, the Six Nations has just finished, but the rest of Ireland's schedule for the year is, it doesn't get much harder. So they've got two tests in South Africa. They're playing four tests in November, which is unusual. So they're going to play the other two Southern Hemisphere teams. The All Blacks coming to Dublin. Joe Schmidt's Australia coming to Dublin, which is going to be amazing. And they're also playing Argentina and Fiji. So, like, that's almost a mini World Cup pool in itself. So there's so much rugby still to be played. And obviously, at the end of the year, Andy Farrell is going to leave and go on a sabbatical to take over the Lions. So for next year's Six Nations, there's going to be someone else in charge. It's fully expected to be Simon Easterby. So I think that's why there'll be more continuity in South Africa. And look, Stephen touching it there before he left, that tests don't come much tougher, particularly against this South Africa side. Rassie Erasmus did a press conference last week when he was introducing Gerry Flannery as his defence coach, and Tony Brown, who's come in, he's a Kiwi. He's going to be really fascinating to see what he can do with the Springbok setup. But he had already signalled how Ireland are coming down, and Ireland have had the better of South Africa when they've played them at the World Cup as well, since Rassie Erasmus has come back and taken charge. So Ireland are going down there with a massive target on their back, even though South Africa are the world champions. So it's going to be an incredibly tough challenge, but one that Andy Farrell, already in his post-match press conference last Saturday, spoke about is absolutely relishing.
Look, we see things through green glasses the whole time. Well, I most certainly do. But when you look at the Six Nations, surely Italy should be a talking point. I mean, they beat Wales, they beat Scotland, they should have beaten France, they nearly beat England. Talk about change. They've completely reinvented themselves.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, obviously Ireland, like you said, Ruby, we're looking at it through green tinted glasses. But if you do step back, Italy have been the story of the Six Nations in so many ways. To get the draw that they... Look, they were really poor against Ireland. That was probably their poorest performance. But interestingly, Andy Farrell said that that was probably the performance that he was most happy with, because Ireland nilled them and off the back of Marseille. But when they got the draw, and it could have been a win in France, they could have easily have been happy, you know, that, oh, we got our draw, like, that kind of saves our Six Nations. But to have backed it up with two wins against Scotland and Wales was absolutely incredible. And, like, let's not forget either, they had a new head coach taking charge who did come in and build on the good work, I think, that Kieran Crowley had done. But so many exciting Italian players coming through at the moment. I mean, you got Menoncello, you've got Brex. And the good thing is as well is that the Italian under-20s over the last couple of years have been producing good players. Like, the Italy 20s caused Ireland a lot of problems this year. So the Italian rugby is probably in the strongest place it's ever been. And it feels like now that there's more hope that this isn't going to be a false dawn, because we've had a couple of them with Italy in the past. It's great for rugby, and it's great for Six Nations rugby.
Do you get the sense from maybe the last few weeks of the Six Nations that the Chasing Pack are closing the gap on Ireland?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I think the first three rounds overall, it was pretty poor fare. I thought Ireland were outstanding in Marseille in the opening night, but again, it was caveated by the fact that they played most of that game against 14 men. England's performance against Ireland, where they hit heights that they just haven't hit probably since the 2019 World Cup. And to be fair, they backed it up. I know they didn't get the win in France, but they backed it up. The best thing that happened to France was the changes that they made for the last couple of rounds, because that injection of youth and, you know, fresh blood and all that definitely worked in their favour. There's no doubt that they were missing Antoine Dupont, but they have him still to come back in, so that's going to make a huge difference. They're going on a developmental tour this year this summer to Argentina, I believe, so their depth chart is going to be enhanced as well. So that would definitely be my sense, Marie. I agree with Stephen, his point earlier, that Ireland were like definitely deserving winners of the Six Nations. They were the best team for me by a distance, but by the end, with them kind of stumbling over the line a little bit, and you look at the quality of the game that England and France delivered, I think the gap has been narrowed. And I don't think anyone within the squad will be getting carried away to thinking just because they've won back-to-back Six Nations titles that they're all of a sudden streets ahead. I don't think that's the case at all.
Not so bad. What about Wales then? Warren Gatland offered his resignation to the CEO and she turned him down, and he's staying on. They're at a furlough.
Yeah, it was probably clever that Warren Gatland kind of said that in the media. There was no chance he was going to, they were going to accept his resignation, because they have him on a bumper contract till the end of the next World Cup. And to be fair, he probably is the kind of character that they need to get them back on track. But like, Ruby, we've just definitely discussed Wales a good few times over the last couple of years in this show. Like, the chickens have just come home to roost. Like, for anyone who's a passing interest in rugby and who watches the URC and sees the scores like that the Irish teams in particular put on the Welsh regions, generally won't be surprised to see that as soon as that golden generation of Dan Biggar, Alwyn Jones, Lee Halfpenny, Liam Williams departed the stage, the gap, like, there's been a lost generation of players, and we're seeing that now. They've had a couple of bright lights. Daffod Jenkins came in as captain, Cameron Winnett at fullback, but God, it's going to take a few years for this Welsh team to get anywhere near what they expect, because I would say this is a new low. This is rock bottom. It doesn't get any worse, finishing bottom of the Six Nations without a win. And like I said, you look at the financial problems in Welsh rugby, you look at the Ospreys have done okay, to be fair, this season, but by and large the Welsh regions have been really, really struggling, so it doesn't look like it's going to get better anytime soon there.
When you look at a new URC, Keane, and you look at the financial issues within the Welsh regions, there's probably an argument that there's too many regions. And then you look across the border into the UK, into England even, at the Gallagher Premiership and some of the financial issues surrounding their clubs. Can you see a URC encompassing England at some point?
I think the URC has been pretty good, to be fair. I think it's still a bit mad that you have South African teams, and it's obviously they play so far away, so it's not like people can get to a way to support them unless you've got a lot of money or you're going on a once in a lifetime holiday. But I think the standard of the URC, even allowing for the fact that the Welsh teams haven't been great, has actually been excellent. You look at Munster's win last year and the run that they went on to win it. Look, I think a lot of people in Wales would prefer if the regions did join the English Premiership, but I'm not sure if that is a mutual feeling. I don't know if the English Premiership feel like they would benefit much by having them in it. But I think there's going to be a review, Ruby, taking place in terms of Welsh rugby in the summer, maybe, definitely in a few months. And cutting a region is definitely going to be on the table again, because there is a sense that they just can't keep going the way they are, particularly with the lack of money that they have, I suppose, to be able to properly fund them all.
Alan Cole, you're going to be interested in this. Bernard Jackman was on with us on Sunday Sport yesterday, and he was detailing the situation in Wales and told us about the fact that soccer is way more advanced, so they've got way better facilities. The facilities for the kids playing rugby, the pitches, the drainage is bad, they're off all the time, so a lot of the kids are now drifting away from rugby and into football because they're getting to play all of the time.
Yeah, it matters massively, Marie. I'm sure we have the debate and the argument all the time about our facilities for grassroots, but just in a region like that, I suppose, funny, on the weekend, Cardiff and Swansea were playing, packed out stadium, 40,000, I think, huge derby over there as well. And our own Noel Mooney, who was involved here in the FEI, is obviously looking after things over there in terms of the development of the game for Welsh football as well. Now, the Wales international team haven't been going great, obviously, in recent times, but it's interesting to hear that a lot of kids are kind of veering towards the soccer route, which must be a worry when you look at the Six Nations.
Winning matters, yeah. Doesn't it? If you're a kid, and we can see that in different sports this year, you look at it in Limerick, like the Limerick hurlers, yeah, at the moment, like everyone wants to play hurling in Limerick because, you know, kids see the players playing. If you're a young Welsh rugby player at the moment and you're seeing them being hammered every week in the Six Nations, it doesn't look like much fun. So that's why I said it's so important that in the next couple of years, the next year could be a write-off for them as well in terms of the Six Nations, because these guys have so little experience and they're so young. But in terms of, you know, trying to inspire the next generation, Welsh rugby needs to get back on track as soon as possible, or like you said, Marie, more and more kids are going to be attracted to soccer, and you lose a second generation because they've already lost one generation.
Yeah, because they just want to play. Just before we finish up on the rugby, so if Andy Farrell has finished meeting the players for a few beers and he's doing his review of the Six Nations, what's going to be concerning him most and what will he be most happy about?
He'll be most happy that they managed to retain their title. Look, like I said, it was a strange occasion at the weekend, but you should not take away anything from Ireland's achievement. There's a reason why back-to-back Grand Slams have never been won. It's because they're bloody tough to do. So retaining the title, when you consider that Ireland went away to France and England, is a really good achievement. And you go back to the doom and gloom that a lot of people would have felt not that long ago, post-World Cup, another quarter-final exit. How are Irish rugby going to survive without Johnny Sexton? Jack Crowley has stepped in really well. So I think he'll be hugely encouraged by the fact that Jack Rowley actually played every minute, Marie, of Ireland's Six Nations campaign. He was one of three players, along with James Lowe and Caelan Doris, who played all 400 plus minutes, whatever it was. So, like, that tells you how important he's been. He'll be hugely encouraged with that. He'll be concerned about the line-out. I think he'll be happy with the scrum. I think he'll want to develop his depth chart a little bit more in certain positions, particularly at loose head, scrum half. Like, he went further down his depth chart when Jordan Larmour played at the weekend in terms of fullback. A lot of people were wondering what would happen if Hugo Keenan was injured. Kieran Frawley got a game there as well, so that was positive to see. You've also got guys like James Ryan to come back from injury. Looks like he's going to be out now for a while for Leinster, which is a huge blow. But Mac Hansen will be back, as I thought Calvin Nash was outstanding on the wing for Ireland, but Mac Hansen coming back will give you something fresh as well. So I think if he's sitting down, he'll be overall hugely, hugely pleased. But like any coach, he'll find areas of improvement. And look, isn't that exactly the way you want to be? You're champions, but there's plenty of room for improvement. I think that's not a bad job at all.
I would completely agree with that. Keane Tracy, thanks a million for joining us this evening on Game On. We'd go take a quick break.
Game On 2FM.
Welcome back. We are turning our attention to hurling now, and Niall Moran joins us, as he does every single Monday. So just to bring you up to speed on where the league is, the makeup of next year's league is now confirmed. Clare, Kilkenny, Cork, Wexford, Limerick, Tipperary and Galway are in Division 1A. Division 1B, Waterford, Offaly, Dublin, Westmeath, Antrim, Carlow and Laois or Down. And then the Allianz Hurling semi-finals for 2024 are Clare versus Tip and Limerick versus Kilkenny there on next weekend. So, Niall Moran, the league is coming to an end. It's not quite there yet, but a lot of it is done. Who do you think is going to be happiest at this point?
I suppose it's hard to think that the league has come to an end, Marie, and you see the weather that the lads had to endure at the weekend. You would imagine that it was nearly like the first round of the league. I'd say a lot of them are glad to see the back of it, the way the weather finished up. But look, I suppose you'd have to say that the Clare are probably one of the teams that are going to be happiest with the league. They've tried out an awful lot of guys, and again, into a league semi-final. Again, Tipperary will relish a chance at having a go off them, albeit above in Port Laois, which seems like a very strange venue for, I suppose, two neighbours to be going all the way up the motorway. But look, again, with pitch availability, etc. The pitch related, obviously it was forced. Just, I suppose, one thing even on that, Marie, I suppose the timing of both league semi-finals and the hurling, they're kind of funny in terms of a promotional viewpoint. Like, a half hour on a Saturday is not your stereotypical throwing time. And even again Sunday evening at 4 o'clock, like, I don't think the Jay have covered themselves in glory in terms of promoting what are likely to be two great games. But I suppose, look, again, going back to your original question, who would be happiest? I'm sure Wexford would be very, very happy. Have, you know what I mean, huge fill up for their development, being in Division 1A there next year. As I said, already said, look, Clare will be happy. Look, I'm sure Limerick themselves will be happy as well. A lot of guys blooded as well. So look, it's 5 weeks of championship now. It's coming around very quickly.
Jeez, it really is coming around quickly. And look, Division 1B, it's probably not where a lot of the counties want it to be, but for the likes of Waterford in particular, how big a blow was it for them, and how disappointing were they in this league? Maybe you didn't think they were disappointing at all, but just what was your overall thoughts on the job that Davey's been doing with them?
I suppose, again, look, they're probably one of the only teams that I haven't seen in person. And again, you're relying on the clips that you see, etc. Again, look, confidence is probably a key issue. I know I touched on it here before, Marie, and as you well know there yourselves, that sometimes just when you're struggling for a bit of confidence, you're kind of, it's like digging with a shovel. The harder you dig, the bigger the hole gets that you find yourself in. And I think Waterford are one of those teams. Again, like, I know we've alluded to this probably third quarter fallout, but even yesterday's, or the game on Saturday, like, they had a number of chances there coming down the home straight whereby they could have got a result against Kilkenny. And do you know what I mean? They might just need a little bit of luck, small little bit of luck on top of everything else, and things might turn a bit for them. Again, look, the style of play has been questioned, but look, again, you're going to have to hold your overall verdict till they play the first round against Cork. And that really is a huge game, because if it goes against them, unfortunately, what's happened for Waterford the last number of years is when the thing has gone away from them, they've kind of completely fallen apart. So that's just going to be such a big game. And again, with Cork kind of showing that they're getting into their groove, three wins in a row, like, their task for Waterford is even going to be harder. But again, at least Walsh Park is a home venue. That should come back into their bucket as the championship goes on.
You mentioned Cork there, and they obviously finished really, really strongly with that performance against Wexford and scoring 321. Alan Connolly will no doubt be very happy. But from, I guess, a progression point of view now, where do they need to build on and what do they need to do over the next 4 or 5 weeks until they have that really big Munster game?
Well, I'm sure Pat Ryan's delighted that they have huge currency in confidence. Like, nothing breeds confidence like consecutive wins. And so they have three in the trot, and 321 was probably, was a standout score of any of the teams over the weekend. And again, look, Alan Connolly is obviously the name that's grabbing the headlines, but I think it's just the style of play. And I was very quick to be critical of them myself maybe a month ago on your own show, Marie, where I just said they're so frustrating to watch. But I think even watching them the last couple of days, they're playing the ball a little bit quicker, a little bit longer, and like they're becoming more attractive to watch. Not that they'd be worried about it, but I think results are kind of, they're correlating with their style of play. And I think just like they have a lot of bigger men. The two downies are in play there. Kieran Joyce, big man, six. Alan Connolly, do you know what I mean? Shamie Harney needs to come back into it. If you have big men like that, then you don't need to play in tiki-taka. And do you know what I mean? Like they can go along. And I imagine for the likes of Pat Horgan, who, do you know what I mean, whose pace might be dropping slightly, the quicker the ball comes in, the better it is, because your run is not going to be tracked as quickly, like, you know. So look, Cork will be happy, Marie. Would they have liked a little slice of a league semi-final? I think they would have, for where the team are at in their progress, but look, it's not to be for now.
Do you think Limerick Kilkenny will be happy to be in a league semi-final in Clare and Tip if Cork aren't?
Again, I suppose in Ruby, I don't know, did you get to see much of the game on Saturday? There's so much else going on between the rugby and football and after a week's racing.
That's one of his highlights, Niall Moore, was watching the
It was live on the television in the rain.
Yeah, Jesus. No, I said there's so much going on. I tell you, it was definitely a weekend for lads at a bar stool. But I suppose one of the things about Limerick that was really, I suppose, positive from a Limerick point of view is it was the kind of game on Saturday that they'd have been forgiven for losing it. I suppose they had a man sent off having to play 50 minutes in horrendous conditions in a game that ultimately was a dead rubber from Limerick's point of view. Yet, this was the competitive streak came out in them right the way to the very end. And it's mad, just things like they just hate losing. They love winning. And I suppose, like, again, for like Limerick will love to be testing themselves against Kilkenny. And so bear in mind, if it is championship that we're focusing on, like, there's a lot of guys in Limerick still trying to stake their claim for a place. And same with Kilkenny. And Kilkenny will love the challenge as well, because again, they are the aristocracy of hurling, and they'll be sticking their teeth and listening to people going on about Limerick this and Limerick that, when Kilkenny's own track record has been very, very good over the last few years. So look, it's a brilliant challenge, but Ruby Marie, like, again, it's Saturday at 4:30. I think again, even below in Cork, and I know there's pitch availability, but I part of me thinks Limerick would nearly have been happy to go up to Nolan Park and play it. Like, do you know what I mean? For a lot of people, it's as easy to get up to Nolan Park on a Saturday at that time than it is to go to Cork, like, you know. But look, it'll be a very interesting game, yeah.
So, Niall, where are all these players coming from? Like, the conveyor belts, like, you said yourself, John Kiely has a plethora of players to choose from, but what is it and what's driving them all on?
I suppose, look, if you're training and playing in that environment, like, you've no choice but to be better, because if you're not better, then you're not even going to be on the panel. And look, on the ground level here in Limerick, one thing that I've seen over the last number of years, and again, I use Kilkenny as a barometer for this, but guys are actually being picked up out of the club championship. And I'm talking about guys that might be in their mid-20s, guys who have performed for clubs that may not necessarily have been through the academy systems or school systems. So I suppose the caveat is there to be better. Like, whereas before, I don't know, it always is incentivized for a fella to really put himself out there to make these panels. But so that comes a little bit of success. But I do throw it out there as well, Marie, for all this talk about players and stuff, like, there is a lot of other counties who have a lot of really good players coming, like Galway. Do you know what I mean? They look to have found a couple as well, like Gavin Lee. Again, he had a very, very good outing from the last day. Keenan Fahey at six was excellent. Derek Fahey cementing himself in goal. Clare have a lot of guys, and like, we're not the only county producing players, for all the talk and this, that and the other. Like, at the end of the day, a lot of the counties are finding players throughout the league, and there also comes down that you can only play 15 at the end of the day. So it's kind of loose talk in some ways. Yeah, look, Limerick have found a couple that have done well, but again, as I said, it's when you're surrounded by very good players, it's also easier to make that step up too, like, you know.
Do you think the new league format will help other counties to find more players, to give more players confidence, to encourage more people to play?
I think if you were trying to find players, Ruby, going forward, I think Division 1B might be the place where you'll have a little bit of scope, because you know what I mean? You have a little bit of scope in those games for, just say for argument's sake, the likes of Waterford, like they'll probably see there's three or four teams in there in that division next year that, you know what I mean, that you could conceivably try guys out for. I think the division 1A is going to be really, really competitive. And I suppose while it's brilliant to be testing yourself there in terms of championship, it mightn't be as easy for managers to try and throw a guy in because like, it is going to be very, very high octane. But I suppose, again, the question is, like we've had a really, really good league. We're now facing the semi-finals next Saturday. Could we have just gone straight for the top two teams in division, the two divisions, and had a straight knockout final? There's maybe the argument for it because, like, even if the league final, say next weekend, obviously the league semi-finals, there's a 2-week gap, mm-hmm. and then I think the following week is into championship. If you were talking about a league final being on maybe next week, then I do think you've the possibility of teams really going at it with leaving nothing to chance. Whereas, let's just say for argument's sake, it's been thrown out there that if Limerick and Clare were to play in league final, you'd wonder, would those two counties go with a full outfit today of the league final, given what's coming around the corner with championship? You know? So I suppose it has been really, really entertaining league. I suppose, but there are still little things that, with championship, is such close proximity to championship, there are some little issues that Shea might still need to address, just in terms of the finals and how they play and maybe when they play them.
Okay, well, give us your verdict on the two semi-finals that are on next weekend.
I would say, again, look, it's two form teams. Like, again, you have to say that they are Limerick and Clare. My verdict will probably come when I see the teams being picked. I suppose it depends on the attitudes of it. Like, do you know what I mean? I still think Limerick will go out and want to win the National League. I think Kilkenny will definitely want to put them down. And judging what I saw in the Limerick game at the weekend, I'd still feel that Limerick will probably beat Kilkenny. That's the hope. But again, there's nothing between those teams and it'll be an intriguing contest. And again, with Tip and Clare, like on form, Clare looked to be a little bit ahead of where Tip are at. But I just think it'd be a massive fitter up for Tipperary. And it's been a really positive start for hurling in Tip even this year. But looking at some of the colleges, like winning their things, and you know what I mean? A lot of guys picking up Skimming Cup medals. So I think Clare and Tip will be a really interesting game, but there's going to be nothing between them. And again, it all depends probably on the attitude that all those counties bring to that match.
Kind of reading between the lines here, but trying to figure out what you're saying. Next weekend could be two finals in a 3 weeks' time. Could almost be a friendly.
Yeah, that's possibly Ruby, what I'm saying. Yeah.
That was good, Ruby.
You heard it here first, yeah. On Game On.
Niall, thank you so much for that. Appreciate it. As always, time for a break. Stay with us, though. Alan Cawley is waiting very patiently to talk about Manchester United's big win in the FA Cup.
Game On on 2FM.
Welcome back. As I mentioned before the break, Alan Cawley is standing by, ready to give his two cents on the FA Cup quarterfinals, and so is Stephen Kelly. We're going to keep Alan waiting for another minute or two. Stephen Kelly, how are you?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Did you enjoy yesterday's big game between Liverpool and Manchester United?
I did enjoy it. I really enjoyed it. Just for the spectacle it was, I'm sure you did enjoy it. I'm sure Ruby is waiting in the wings to say how much he actually enjoyed it.
I actually want to know what you thought of Saturday's game between Fulham and Spurs.
No, can we just go past that one? Well, listen, it's a hard one for me. I was there at the cottage. It's difficult because I actually want the Spurs to win because I want Tottenham to get top four. But I've been at the cottage about five times this season and Fulham have been excellent every time I've seen them. They're so fast on the break. The fullbacks are exceptional. Midfield, Willian looks like he's 25, 26. It's ridiculous what he's doing at 35 years of age with 300 games. And now they've actually find a striker that's scoring goals. Muniz, they're a really good side. And I think you can't underestimate them. But Tottenham are really poor. Tottenham were really, really poor in the game. And it's the worst I've seen them play all season. And yeah, they deserve to lose.
If I was in charge of Fulham, I'd be getting you to a few more matches. If I was telling you the trick, standing in the league doesn't suggest it.
No, it doesn't. Honestly, I've seen a 5-0 win there. I've seen a 4-0 win there. I've seen a 3-0 win there. Every time I see them, I think, God, they're very good. Why are they not succeeding consistently? And yeah, they miss players. But I think getting that central striker scoring goals is huge for them. And I think changing when the lads were away from the African Nations, stifle them a bit, and Bassi at the back is important for them. So I think having him gone for the five games was a big miss. So I think he's influential on them.
Well, Al, we get back to the FA Cup now. United 4, Liverpool 3. 120 minutes plus one. What more can you say?
Al?
Well, I'm glad you came back to the FA Cup, because I'll tell you why. I will come to United in a second, but the game of the weekend was Wolves and Coventry.
Yeah,
it was absolutely incredible. And I'll come to that also. But yeah, United was brilliant, Marie. And it was the first time in years, we've all grown up loving the FA Cup, and it was always everybody's dream, and Wembley, and you'd be out in the street playing Wembley and all sorts. And obviously that's been lost over the last recent seasons with the advent of the money in the Premier League, and how important it is to stay in the Premier League, the Champions League, European football. All those things have really hit the FA Cup hard, and teams prioritising promotion, relegation, all those things. So this weekend was the first time it felt like the magic of the cup was rekindled, mm-hmm. and it was absolutely fantastic. All the games, probably Man City Newcastle was the only one, and that was fairly straightforward for them, but the other three games I thought were absolutely magnificent. And yesterday Liverpool will be kicking themselves, because after United getting off to such a brilliant start, started like a house on fire, took the lead, Liverpool then, once they got a foothold in the game and scored two quick goals, second half they were so dominant, Liverpool, in total control of the game without ever really killing it off. And there was times where there was breaks of 3v1 and 4v2s and 5v2s and picking the wrong pass and a bit sloppy. And then there's always that danger, Marie, when there's only one goal in it. I was sitting with a Liverpool fan and I was saying, "Will you relax? Everything is fine. This is total control." And bang, just when you think the game is about to be put to bed, Anthony pops up with just a moment where he hasn't really done anything since he signed. He's the most frustrating signing in a long, long time. But he pops up with a really important goal. And then anything can happen in extra time after that. And Liverpool, once they take the lead again, you're thinking they'll go on and win the game. Sloppy from Nunes, United get the equaliser, and then they shouldn't be conceding from a corner, your own corner as well, Marie. It was so sloppy to concede off that. Brilliant for United, brilliant moment for Diallo, all those kind of things for the club, because it's been in the doldrums obviously, as we know, for the last few seasons. Can they go on and win it? I can't see it, but now that they're in the semi-final, who knows?
What do you put the lack of finishing down to, Stephen? When you look at the calibre of player that Liverpool had, Klopp spoke about it after as well, they had so many chances to kill the game off. They just couldn't seem to get that last pass right. The decision making wasn't great. Is it just fatigue, do you think?
It could be fatigue. But sometimes you have those games. I watched a few games where Diaz had gone through three or four times, I think it was the last round of the FA Cup, and he should have had six goals, and he ended up coming away with one or two, and it was just that last bit, that last finish that wasn't the back of net. Obviously you've got some luck among Salah on your side, and you expect everything he touches to end up in the back of net, but you know, United were guilty of some chances as well. Rashford missed an absolute mm-hmm. sitter to win the game, going through like that, and then Ferry pulls it back with a wonderful goal. But sometimes strikers just miss form, and I think for Liverpool, what's made them so dangerous and what's put them up there is the fact that front three and that midfield have always been putting goals away, chipping in with goals throughout the season, and it's made them a really tough side to play against. And then when you score three away from home at Old Trafford, you should really come away with a win. I mean, so as much as you're saying that, it's they got to be thinking, kicking themselves that to concede the way they did.
Alan, what does this result mean for Erik ten Hag?
It's massive, Marie. It really is, because I suppose the narrative that's been breaking out in recent weeks since the new owners have come in and are assembling their backroom team, if you like, is that he won't be the man in charge. And especially given the way results have gone as well, and they're already preparing Dan Ashworth to come in. And as I said, they're assembling that kind of top quality backroom team that you would want at a top club. So for him, because it was last chance saloon, if you like, in terms of silverware, it's absolutely massive, because whatever chance he does have of being the manager, if he's able to produce an FA Cup at the end of it, at least he's a fighting chance to be able to say, look, I've delivered a cup for you this season. But I still don't think he will be the manager. I actually still don't think they'll go on in Wimbledon. The gulf was massive, but the one thing I will give Man United credit for, and maybe it just fed into the whole rivalry and the atmosphere, they just hung in the game. They showed a bit of fight, they showed a bit of character that we probably haven't seen from them in a long, long time. And despite the fact that they were on the ropes for that whole second half and getting hit with punch after punch, they just hung in the fight. And sometimes that's all you have to do, Marie, and then your moment crops up, and we see it so many times when there's only one goal in it. So I think it is massive for Ten Hag. It keeps the season alive. Obviously, they're in with a chance now of, as I said, delivering that silverware. But in terms of the bigger picture and him going forward, I'd still have serious question marks whether he'll be the manager next year.
Stephen, I'm showing my age here, but it was an FA Cup that Alex Ferguson won with Manchester United that kept him in a job many years ago when things weren't going great. Ten Hag's hardly going to get that lucky, is he?
Ruby, I think you're wishful thinking there. He's going to go on and be as successful as Ferguson after FA Cup.
I know, that's the thing, but that's what Sparta though.
Listen, sometimes that's all it takes. But I do think, like I said, and I've said this on here before, it's not just United getting themselves back to the top level. It's competing with the other managers and the other teams. And City have taken it to the new level. Liverpool did. Obviously, they beat them in the game yesterday. But over the course of a season, Liverpool are way more consistent. And then you've got those other managers to contend with. I know Klopp is gone. I know Ferguson has some very good managers, extra managers in the game when he came along, but not to the same level, I think, that Klopp and the Pep have done. So I think for United to get back anywhere near, it's going to be... it's a lot more than an FA Cup is going to do. But listen, it'd be an amazing title. To take any silverware in a season where you have Liverpool and City competing for everything, it's not something you take lightly, I don't think.
Alan, how do you think Caoimhín Kelleher did?
I thought he was very good again. He's been brilliant in the last few weeks. I have absolutely no qualms whatsoever. I keep making this point to Marie, Dad. He needs to get to the stage where he's competing with Alisson rather being the understudy. And I think in the last 4 or 5 weeks, he's really stood up to the point where he can go to Klopp now and say, he's not on Alisson's level in terms of being a world-class keeper, but he's in a position where he can say, I can fight for my jersey and I feel fully justified in the sense that my performance is back up, that I should maybe keep a jersey. I think he's been absolutely brilliant and it's come at a really good time for him. I think obviously with the international window now, whether John wants to share it with him and give one of them a game each, he might do that. But if it was a qualifier coming up next week, I'd have Caoimhín Kelleher as the number one for Ireland.
It's tough, isn't it?
I don't think there'd be too many complaints with that one.
No, especially off the back of what he's done, Ruby. But I'm glad you mentioned Mark Robbins, because he's the man that scored that famous goal all those years ago, and his team were absolutely incredible at the weekend. I'm not sure.
Dropping Gene Layton and bringing on Les Sealy, that was the winner of that It was a real managerial decision.
Yeah, poor Jim. Poor Jim never spoke to Alex Ferguson after that.
He was in the dock, wasn't he?
He broke his heart, and Archie Knox wanted to stick up for him, and he says, "You can't drop Jim." And he says, "I'm dropping Jim if we want to win this cup." It was unbelievable.
That's management.
And Les Sealy, who we knew, he says, "Les Sealy is not as good as Jim, but he'd win me the cup." And he did.
Yeah.
Brilliant it was.
Coventry Wolves, Stephen Kelly.
Yeah, no, to go in the drama and the fashion that I did, like Coventry actually played really well throughout the game. Chances, unbelievable chances, probably the miss of the season, well, one of the misses of the season from Sims, and then he goes on, scores two and sets up the winner. So you have to give him credit, but to keep going and to win it late on like they did, and, you know, it's like Colley says, you're kind of growing up watching the FA Cup, and that was like the big game that was always on for as a kid, and that this weekend reminds you of those fixtures. To have a tie like that goes to the wire and an underdog side comes out on top against a Wolves team, people are tipping on Neil to be manager of the season for what he's done there. So for Coventry to get the one over in them, and they lost their two best players in the summer after getting beaten in the playoffs. So to be in a position where they're still competing and near the playoffs already this season, and they're gone into an FA Cup semi-finals. Remarkable job. Absolutely remarkable.
Alan, the manner of their performance meant that they deserved it too.
I'm so glad you said that, Marie. Yeah, the manner of the performance, it was so good. It wasn't just one of those backs to the wall and picked up a set piece or a fluky goal. They played Wolves off the park, and as Stephen rightly says, he's been getting rave reviews, Gary O'Neill, and rightly so, because he's done such a good job and Wolves have been good to watch. But to fall behind so late in the day as well with two quick goals and to show the character and the fight and still keep going, it was unbelievable.
Fairy tale stuff, it was brilliant.
And not alone that as well, look at the quality of the finish, the goal from Hadji Wright, because it was a ball played into Sims, a lovely little layoff, and his finish into the far corner was as good as you'll see anywhere, Marie. So as I said, the FA Cup weekend really, really delivered, and I'm delighted to see it, because it is magical, the FA Cup.
Chelsea and Leicester, Stephen, as well, was a really entertaining game. Really, really good goals.
Yeah, great goals. The own goal was as good as the rest.
It was a good one. It was like a shot.
That little nudge just puts him off and he just whips it in behind the goalkeeper. Leicester were flying high for a long time. I know Leeds have started to catch them in the championship, and you have Ipswich, Kieran McKenna's Ipswich, that are doing really well to push them. But Leicester are a very strong side. With the position they got themselves in, you kind of tell they could take Chelsea, but then I think the power Chelsea have, the pace, a little bit more belief in the side, and they're starting to pick up wins at the bridge. So it's not as easy a place as it was to go before. And obviously the drama with Sterling missing the penalty and then the horrendous free kick that he took as well. So I'm sure there's going to be words taking the ball off Palmer like that. I don't think that goes down too well. But Chelsea came out winners on top, I think deservedly so, but Leicester put up a really good fight.
And obviously City never gave Newcastle a kick, Al.
Yeah, and that's the worry, Ruby. You look at obviously the four teams left, and we're saying how obviously the magic of the cup, and could United go on and win it, it'd be great for Ten Hag. Coventry obviously haven't won it in so long, and I suppose their priority is they're going well in the Championship as well, and would like to make the playoffs, which it looks like they probably will. But imagine them winning the FA Cup, what it would mean to them. And Chelsea the same with Pochettino, desperate for one trophy. So you look at those three, and there's all so many reasons why you'd like to see maybe one of those win it, but Man City are just so strong, as we know, and they just cast Newcastle aside like with ease, really. Two fortunate goals, deflections, but they never really looked in danger, Ruby. And I suppose with the four teams left, they'll be odds on to go on and win it now, Man City.
Newcastle only had two shots, Al, or Stephen, and one on target the whole game. Whatever about City, yeah. Lucky Newcastle were never going to score either.
No, Newcastle were awful, but City smothered them. I think that's the second time I've seen Newcastle play this season where they actually haven't touched the ball for the game. Arsenal at Highbury a few weeks ago, they got battered by Arsenal 4-0, could have been 6-7. And City, it was 2-0, and that doesn't reflect the domination that they had in that game. They completely dominated from start to finish, Newcastle. And you worry for how, because I like him as a manager. Obviously what they did, I think, last season was way above what they should have really been doing. And that's brought the expectation levels higher for that club, for where they should be and what they should be competing with, I think. So he's going to be under scrutiny now to get them back up to a decent level. But with the fair play, or with the points deduction has gone on now, they're going to have to be really careful about how they spend the money, even though they're rolling in it. They're going to have to be careful about how they go about it, because you can't just throw at it the way they did before. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it's the type of performance, Ruby, that, as Stephen said, I'm the same. I like Eddie Howe. He's done such a brilliant job since he's gone in there. But that type of performance, I know it's Man City, but to not lay a glove on them or show a bit of fight in the FA Cup, that's the type of one that would bring serious pressure on him. And you're thinking, I suppose, with the owners they have at the moment, I know he's been hampered heavily by injuries throughout the season, but it was a really, really poor one at the weekend.
Yep, disappointing for them, but a good weekend for many of the teams, including Manchester United, so we have to give them a bit of credit. That is all we have time for this evening. Myself and Ruby will be back tomorrow. We might get stuck into Cheltenham a little bit more. We'll also be reflecting on a really entertaining weekend of Gaelic football. Such an entertaining weekend of sport all round. It's really hard to pack it all in on a Monday, but we will do our best as always. We'll be back tomorrow. Al, Steve and Ruby, that's it.
Thanks, Marie.
Bennett De Silva's up next.
RTE 2FM.